Next is our regularly scheduled Mesa City Council study session for February the 2nd. Acknowledge again that Mr. Whitaker and Winkle are present telephonically. The first item on our agenda for this meeting is to review items on the agenda for the February 6th regular council meeting. So, Council, if you could please take a look at that document. The meeting begins and with considering various liquor licenses under agenda item 3. Item 4 is taking action on various purchasing contracts. Yes, Mr. Thompson.
Just out of curiosity, Chris, can on items 4C, 4D for the vehicles, prior to those going out to auction, can we have PD, can we allow PD to go through and pick out some vehicles for their street crimes units?
I'll ask Mr. Scarfiotti to answer that question.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor, and good morning, Council Member Thompson. Could you repeat the question, please?
Before we go out to auction on the vehicles, on the surplus vehicles that we're replacing, can we allow PD to go through and pick out some of the vehicles for their street crimes units that could be, that they could be utilized?
Yes, actually they could if they wanted to do that. Yeah, we do certain different things in the disposal process. Sometimes we trade the vehicles in, and sometimes we auction them, and sometimes direct sale to other governmental agencies.
Yeah, and Mayor, Councilmember Thompson, I think most of these are, if I'm not mistaken, these are pickups and Tahoes. I think they usually get a little different variety, but we can certainly see if there's any that they're interested in.
Councilmember Thompson, they also have a seizure program where they get a number of vehicles, and these sometimes fit the undercover profile better because they don't look like a city vehicle, and the mixture of make and model is you know, different. And they maintain a fleet of those. We assist in the maintenance of that. And we evaluate those vehicles once the seizures are done. They'll bring them to us. We'll go through, make sure that they're a good investment to keep and use on the street. So we also have that program.
Do you know how many vehicles they have in seizure right now that they can utilize?
They have a huge yard. The last time I looked, there was about 200 vehicles in the yard. And how many they actually have in service, I don't know that.
Mike? Councilmember
Thompson, I don't have an exact number on the seizure fleet. For what you're asking, for the retired vehicles that we're getting rid of and going to auction, I believe you're asking if we can look at those to utilize those for PD purposes, and we can work with Pete to see if we can utilize any of those for that purpose. The purchase, as Mr. Brady mentioned, is for replacement vehicles for Tahoes, but we can, before we get rid of the old, we can see what we can repurpose for us. And we continuously look at our seizure fleet and our different programs for our forfeitures to see what we can repurpose for PD use.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mayor and Council, one of the things to remember also is when we go and auction off vehicles that have gone through the cycle, those dollars go back into our vehicle replacement fund to help finance or fund new vehicles also. So we're trying to be very diligent, and Pete's trying to do the most best he can to maximize the value of the vehicles that we turn back auction so that we can use those dollars to purchase the next group of vehicles. So.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Continuing to look at the agenda for the formal council meeting, I think we're on item 4, various purchase contracts. Any additional questions related to those items?
I have a question. This is Ryan Winkle.
Yes, I'm sorry, is that Mr. Winkle?
Yes. Yes. When what constitutes the retirement of a vehicle? Is it just like a mileage number, or is it unusable at that point?
Yeah. Good question. Here, Mr. Scarfiotti will answer that question.
Good morning, Council Member Winkle. To answer your question, there's a number of factors that we take a look at. One is the overall total cost of the vehicle during its life. You know, we have a capital cost, and then what we're doing is offsetting that by the operational cost. So once a vehicle starts accumulating a lot of operational costs, it actually is cheaper then to go ahead and buy a replacement vehicle. But there's other things that we take a look at. We look at the efficiency of the vehicle. We look at the utility of the vehicle. So we're looking at it kind of from the perspective of the operating department. If there's been a change in mission and a vehicle needs to be changed due to that. So there's a number of different things and different criteria that we look at.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Any additional questions on agenda items, anything under agenda item four? I think you're good. Thank
okay.
you, sir.
Thank you.
Agenda item five are taking actions on various resolutions. And six is receiving public comment on various ordinances. And seven is approving subdivision plats. Any questions or concerns about the agenda? It appears everything is currently still on the consent agenda for Monday's meeting.
And Mayor, items 5, F, G, and H we're going to be visiting with here in the next items on the study session, too.
Okay. Well, great. The next item on our agenda then for today's meeting, item 2A, is to hear a presentation and discuss proposed bond refunding, defeasance, and bond program update. It's good to have Mr. Mike Kennington, our Chief Financial Officer, and Larry Given, our financial genius, with us today. Thank you, gentlemen. I'm thinking this is going to be good news. So,
yes. Good morning, Mayor and Council members. We appreciate the time today. As we have three items on the agenda for Monday, for your consideration, we'd like to give you a quick update on our bond program with a little update. And so the first slide, let's see. So as you know, municipal bonds are loans that investors make to the city for certain capital projects for a variety of years. And the municipal bonds were able to issue at a favorable rate because they're tax exempt, which means investors that make those loans don't have to pay taxes, federal income taxes, and many states as well on those the interest they earn on those loans. Now, the two primary types of municipal bonds are the general obligation bonds, which are backed by the full faith and credit of the cities, and revenue bonds, which are backed by the revenues from the projects that the bonds are paying for. For the city of Mesa, after 2008, in order to find a stable source of revenue to pay for the debt service, the council has tied all authorizations for bonds to secondary property tax. I'm sorry. any issuance or any authorization that the voters have granted have been tied to secondary property tax. The revenue bonds that we're going to be discussing in large part today are utility revenue bonds, and those are paid for from the revenues by the utilities because that enjoy the infrastructure because the infrastructure is paid for by the bonds. So the next slide, we have a quick snapshot of our bond portfolio, the city of Mesa. As you can see, the largest two are the utility revenue and our general obligation bonds. We also have excise tax bonds, which are backed, secured by excise taxes. The HERF, or the streets bonds that are backed by the gas tax, the state share gas tax, or the highway user charges and fees. And finally, we have state water loans, which are paid for by water revenue. As we go deeper into the GO bonds, we see here on the bottom left, we have a table of our with our authorizations. And in the middle column, on the right column, we have our authorizations that we haven't issued yet, the unissued. You can see the first three columns that are shaded, those are pre-2008. So currently we don't have a revenue source identified for those, and the bottom two are post-2008. On the top right, you see we have a bar chart that has our debt service in the future that we have to pay. And when I say debt service, I mean the principal and interest. And then on the bottom right, we have our outstanding principal again and our ratings. So we use Moody's and S&P's, and we have an investment grade rating. So what does that mean, the $350 million outstanding? So per the Arizona Constitution, there are some limitations on how many general obligation bonds we can issue as a city of Mesa. One bucket is about 20% of our net assessed valuation, and those are certain types of GO bonds that you can see on the slide here. Another category is a 6% limit that we have, and again, this is on our net assessed valuation. On the bottom left, we have a table that shows our limitations that are calculated based on our net assessed valuation and how many bonds outstanding are in the second row. So if you total that up, you see our debt capacity that we've used is about 40%. every year the state issues a debt report that looks at all the towns and cities and counties and school districts and looks at our debt and our limits. And we, you know, there's a certain number of cities that we compare ourselves to and benchmark. And you can see on the next, in the bottom right, are the cities we typically compare ourselves to. And you can see there we're about in the middle of the road as far as our capacity that we've used, 40%. So going on to utility systems revenue bonds, these, again, are paid for by the revenues of the utilities. And on the bottom left, you see the authorizations that we have and the authorizations that we haven't yet issued. On the top right, you see the bar chart with our debt service. And as you can see, we try to keep that fairly level with Larry's help on structuring the bonds. Obviously, it's easier to manage the city with a level debt service amount. On the bottom right, you see our outstanding principal and, again, our ratings from Moody's and S&P's. And, again, what does this mean? How do we compare? You see on the next slide, the state looks at our bond principal total outstanding at about $1.6 billion. Then they divide that among our residents, and you get a debt per capita of about $3,483. And if you've seen the table, the bar chart, I guess, we compare favorably with the cities that we typically compare ourselves to at $3,483. So per resident, we have about $3,483 worth of debt. So the next slide, we talk about refunding. And here at the city of Mesa, we typically refund. And refunding is like refinancing. You're replacing your existing debt with new debt. And we typically do that for two reasons, to either restructure the debt, the current debt, or to save because the new debt is cheaper. The borrowing cost is less expensive than the existing debt. And we use a rule of thumb about 3%. So we always look to get 3% of savings, present value savings of the bond that we are refunding, or that's being refunded, I guess I should say. So on the agenda for Monday, we are proposing three items for the council to consider. And like the mayor said, it's good news. The first one is a GO bond that we expect. Our latest estimates show us saving about $3.7 million over the next 12 years. The utility revenue bonds, we are estimating to save about $8 million over the next 11 years. And finally, we always look for ways to just pay down our debt. And so we have restricted impact fee fund balance that we would like to retire $6 million worth of debt in the utility revenue bond program. If the council approves those items, we are planning to go to the market and price those bonds on the week of February 27th and close those bonds on April 3rd. Now, this year we also typically sell new money bonds as well. In addition to refunding, we also have new money bonds every year that for new projects. And this year we are projected to issue $47 million worth of GO bonds and about $124 million worth of utility revenue bonds for those projects listed on the slide. And that timeline is a little bit similar to the other one. We would come back to council in early April for your consideration on those items. And then in May, early May and late May, we would price and close those bonds. So that is all the prepared presentation we had. We'd love to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mike. Council, any questions? Yes, Mr. Or
no
Mr.
question. Leno. I'm sorry, no questions but comment. Thank you for this amazing savings. We're going to be saving a lot of money within the next 10, 12 years. So I appreciate the hard work that you both do to ensure that we save our residents and our taxpayers money. And I appreciate the hard work that you do to do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Luna. I appreciate the help that Larry gives and his firm as well. They continue to look for deals that we can save the 3% minimum and hopefully more, like in the deals we have today in front
of you. Thank you, Larry.
Thank you. Yes, Mr. Thompson.
And this may be more for Chris, perhaps Scott, but on the HERF, do we know traditionally how much has been swept and how that impacts our financials on the, you know, every year they seem to sweep a little more. And then I think there's a threat this year that HERF is going to be swept once again. What type of fiscal impact does that have on us as a city?
Yeah. Good morning, Mayor, Councilmember Thompson. The governor's budget proposal did include what has now become, unfortunately, the traditional reallocation of HERF funds to pay for DPS. So every year there's conversations at the legislature about trying to find a new funding source, a permanent funding source for DPS. But until that time, it looks like the HERF transfer will continue. The good news in that is that the HERF transfer has decreased over the last several years to just be DPS instead of paying for other governmental services that the state needed funding for. So we have a rough number that we've used the last several years that account for DPS's operations out of that. I wish I could be more optimistic, but in the environment at the legislature right now, coming up with new revenue and new funding sources is pretty pretty bleak prospect of that. So I suspect that will continue. But you continue to hear communities, especially those who don't have the diverse funding sources of a city of Mesa or Phoenix, especially rural cities that really struggle because they don't have street bonds, they don't have other mechanisms to fund their infrastructure. But I do believe these HERF sweeps will probably continue at the current level for the foreseeable future.
And just a reminder, Mayor and Council, and this, that was a good question. Thank you. So we have our local street sales tax. So the HERF dollars come into that fund that we've set aside where we, in our transportation fund. So it includes the HERF dollars and includes the local sales tax that's collected. And that's where we pay out the debt service as well as pay for operations related to street maintenance.
So on that topic, given that some of our bonds are secured by HERF funds, does the legislature have the ability to come in and entirely sweep HERF and thereby making our investors, putting them in a precarious situation?
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, no, that's under the statutes. They're required to make contributions to at least the level of debt service, which is cold comfort, I know, but at least you know that's going to be covered. And the other good news is we're slowly paying those bonds off. I believe that 2027, I know it sounds like a long way away, will be the last year that we pay approximately $12 million a year to pay off old HERF bonds. And the majority of those funds were issued back in the late 90s, early 2000s, and primarily used to build improvements for approaches to the freeways that have been built around the city. And you can appreciate how much money that cost. And I believe it's the city's desire not to issue further any more of those HERF bonds because we need it for maintenance. But so we still have 10 years left to pay on those.
Okay. Thank you very much. A couple of questions. I was at a U.S. Conference of Mayors meeting maybe a few weeks ago, and this was actually a large topic of conversation because the total viability of municipal tax-free bonds is being discussed in Washington, D.C. right now. As you know, we're in the midst of tax overhaul. Yeah. And so cities like Mesa and all over the country are very concerned that municipal tax-free bonds might end up on the cutting room floor at the end of the congressional session, which would make it very difficult for cities like Mesa and every city on the planet to build bridges and freeways and schools and, you know, all of these things are, that's how all of these things are built. So this could be a serious threat to cities being able to finance infrastructure. And so far, the rumor is that President Trump has indicated that he continues to support municipal tax-free bonds, but this is a topic you're going to see discussed in national news throughout this congressional session, I'm sure.
Mayor, Councilmember Thompson actually raised this in the last few days as well in preparation of this meeting, and you're right. In both all of the national organizations representing cities, but basically every level of government that issues debt is very concerned about that. Even though they're called municipal bonds, you do see school districts and water districts, you name it, they issue debt utilizing that mechanism. So it is something vital to infrastructure development in the country. And Mayor, you're correct. There was a delegation of mayors that met with President Trump, well, then President-elect Trump, before he was sworn in. And he indicated that because of the infrastructure side of this and the detrimental impact it could have on developing infrastructure, that he did not support anything that impacted the tax-exempt status of the bonds. Now, that being said, of course, it will be part of if it were to happen, it would be part of a congressional budget deal. And so there's always trade-offs that people have to make. And so that's why the national organizations, I know, are still being as vigilant as ever as Congress looks at different changes coming up once they tackle a full budget, now having one party holding both Congress and the White House. It certainly makes the environment more conducive to get a budget deal done for the first time in many, many years, and so it's something we're definitely going to have to watch out for.
Mr. Winkle, Mr. Whitaker, any questions before we move on?
This is Jeremy. I have a couple of questions. Go ahead, Dan.
Yes, thank you. Please
proceed. I have a question on slide number 5. It shows that our general obligation bond debt essentially by 2036 is kind of going away. Does that mean that we are essentially trying to be bond debt free, or does that mean that this one bond that we're paying now will end at that point?
Mayor, Councilmember Winkle, appreciate that. That's our current debt service schedule for our existing outstanding bond. Every year that we issue new money bonds, we would add to that those bars on the very end and extend that out. So that's just a graph of our current debt outstanding.
Yeah, and so we typically issue bonds that have a term of, 25 years or so. So that just shows you the tail end of the most recent bonds. So each year as we issue additional bonds, you'll see those stacks grow a little bit each year.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Jeremy. I have a question on slide 9, the refunding bonds. Is there a cost to refund those bonds? Or the analogy that was made was to refinancing your house, where obviously there's typically fees incurred, or is there no fees on the refunding side?
Mayor, Councilmember Whitaker, you're correct. There are cost of issuance from the bond council to the rating agencies that we have to pay to our financial advisor. So they're the normal cost of issuance, just like you mentioned on your house, the normal cost of closing.
So then on slide 10, when it talks about the savings, I'm assuming that the cost of refunding those bonds is built into those estimated savings numbers?
That's exactly right. The savings that I mentioned are net of those costs. You're right.
Okay, great. Thanks, Mike. And then slide 12, we were talking about new money bond activity in 2017. Does that new bond activity have to be approved by voters, or is that something that the city has the ability to just issue?
Mayor, Councilmember Whitaker, good question. That's issuances of current authorization that the voters have already voted and approved. And so the slides that I showed, the GO bonds and the utility revenue bonds, I listed a column on the right that said authorized but unissued. So those numbers would be from that column, from amounts that have already been authorized by the voters but yet issued.
And slide 12, all of those are recently authorized. Yeah. Bonds by the voters, and so we are now just selling the bonds.
Yeah, for Councilmember Whitaker, for example, there are certain projects that take multiple years. For example, the water treatment plant, and so we try to minimize the amount we have to issue each year, and every year we issue just the minimum amount we need to for that 12 months of construction.
Okay, great. And then on those general obligation bonds on slide 5, I noticed that we still have some authorized but unissued bonds from 1987. Are those still active projects, or at what point does that authorization ever get canceled? How does that stuff expire?
Yeah, so Councilmember Whitaker, those, as far as I know, they never expire. But as I mentioned, we don't have an identified source of revenue to pay for those bonds if we were to issue those bonds. So we haven't. There are no plans to issue that remaining authorization.
Yeah, and just Mayor and Councilmember Whitaker, previous to 2008, all those bonds and any other bonds that had previously been authorized and issued were backed by the same resources that are identified in the general funds. So they were. There was no secondary property tax until 2008. In 2008, when the voters approved the authorizations that were set before them, it was stated that they would be secured with a with a secondary property tax. So we chose not to go backwards at this time and pick up those bonds that, even though they're authorized, we could sell the bonds, but we would then also have to increase the secondary property tax in order to sell those bonds.
So you guys have the authorization right now to increase the secondary property tax. We're just choosing not to because we don't have a matching revenue source, if I'm understanding correctly, Chris?
Yes. I think the best way to say it, council member, is in 2008, the council kind of made a conscious decision to say, from this point forward, all projects that are approved by the voters will be backed by a secondary property tax. And so it was kind of a point in time where they tried to make that clarification and that distinction. I think from a legal standpoint, I don't know there's anything we'd have to get bond counsel whether we could go backwards from 2008 and apply the secondary property tax to those authorized projects. But really, we kind of knew in 2008 we made the decision that we were just going to go move forward and scale all the future bond programs with a secondary property tax. And so that's why all the projects, whether it's public safety, transportation, parks, were all identified as kind of going forward and being backed by the secondary property tax. We didn't really look at trying to go backwards retroactively with that. I guess we could. It would just have to be establishing the secondary property tax sufficient to cover that debt.
Okay, got it. And the other question I had on the restructuring of that debt, are we actually restructuring and extending the life of the debt, or does the principal still pay off at the same time frame?
Yeah, Mayor, Councilmember Whitaker, we in these two deals, we're not extending out the term of the bond. We keep the same term.
Okay, excellent. And I promise I only have one last question. Is there any desire for the city to get back to a AAA rated bond with Moody's and Fitch, or is that not the desire? Can you comment as to our current rating and if you guys are comfortable with that?
So, Mayor, Councilman Whitaker, we think we deserve a AAA rating, but there's a lot of factors that go into that. One, it's not just it's both the economy and what's happening in our economy, our dependence on sales tax. Certainly, pension liabilities have become a question that's often raised on our ratings. Our reserves are always looked at and analyzed, determining whether we have enough reserves in place. So there's a multitude of factors. Every year we're trying to push to get higher ratings, but at the same time we're limited by how much we want to, how much we can affect our pension liabilities, our OPEB, which stands for what again?
Our post-retirement employee benefits.
Employee benefits for retirees. And again, just how much the city is willing to set aside for different reserves. And maybe, Larry, there's some other items that I'm missing.
Mr. Mayor, members of council, just so it's clear, these are the highest bond ratings the city has ever had, at least in my experience in the last 30 years. We'd love to have a AAA rating. We're talking to rating agencies next week concerning these bond issues, both the refunding and new money bonds. Of course, we'd love to have AAA ratings. But we're going to do the best we can. But these are the highest ratings the city's ever had.
Thank you. Certainly it's still investment grade. We have people are lining up to buy these bonds so that there's no shortage of
And let me just give you, let me give you perspective. I mean, for Moody's, for example, it's the third highest out of 16 ratings that they have, the one that we currently have. So it's a fairly good rating.
And I would guess Mesa is somewhat unique in that we are the largest city, I think, in the country that doesn't have a primary property tax. We don't tax food, which makes us very unusual. We have an extremely low sales tax. Cities brag about having one of those. When you have three of those, you're just not going to get a AAA rating because the investors, the analysts are going to come in and say, you're kind of on thin ice here. You know, you are an extremely low-taxed community, and so there's some exposure for our for the investors.
Mr. Mayor, I could go on and on. I won't. But I will say this, that the real turning point in the bond rating category for the city of Mesa was 2008, where the property tax was implemented to repay GO bonds. The other issue that the city has that's very favorable is that the city basically has very little excise tax debt, and a bunch of that's going to be paid down, as you know, given the Cubs facility and the land sales and so forth. And so you have those two factors that weigh very heavily in your favor because of the, compared to other major cities we represent, the city has relatively low debt. And I would just leave it at that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Mr. Freeman.
I was also going to say we have the enterprise system that helps, you know, generate some revenue that most cities don't even have.
That's right. Yeah. Which I know we're talking about revenues here in a minute, and that is a good lead-in. But thank you, gentlemen. I know it, for the general public, I hope we ought to put this on a reel and repeat it over and over again because this has been very educational. And I think there are some folks in our community that sometimes look at the amount of bond debt we have and their hair goes on fire because they don't realize that a city of 500,000 people where you're building new streets and you're doing all the things that we're doing to accommodate new growth, the wise thing to do is you don't save up and use your cash for that because given the extremely advantageous rates that we can offer with municipal tax-free bonds, it makes a lot more sense to issue bonds. And so if we didn't have any debt, that would mean that we aren't doing a good job. We're not building anything in our city, and we have to given who we are.
Barry, a great example of how we've used debt as an effective instrument to save the city money is that oftentimes we're able to use the instruments of debt to accelerate major projects, whether it's highway extensions or light rail. And by moving those projects up earlier than when they were, you know, the dollars would be available for them, say 5, 10, 15 years in the future, the cost of construction inflation versus the cost of 4% on interest for the debt, we save so much money by getting the projects done earlier and on time and being able to deliver those improvements to our community much faster than when they would normally be scheduled. And so we've tried to be very careful how we use debt, but in some cases we're able to accelerate major infrastructure projects, which saves us the cost of construction inflation, but it also improves the economic benefit of the community by extending major infrastructure just like we've done around the airport or gateway with Highway 24, or what we've done with light rail. So all those are beneficiaries. Now, sometimes we're even benefit that we never even have to pay the debt because we get money from the region to help pay it off sooner. But we do try to be very careful about how we use it as an instrument to move the city forward.
Thank you very much. And just a number that I want to reiterate is we are only at 40% right now as a general. It's the amount of debt that we could incur per the state constitution and our financial consultant says, so what too much debt would be.
That's correct.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Any additional questions, counsel? Thank you. The next item on our agenda, item 2B, is to hear a presentation and provide direction on a process to update Mesa's citywide housing master plan, which is planned to include both information gathering and community engagement process. Liz Morales, our great housing director, is here. Liz, thank you.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. Very nice to see you this morning. I'm very happy to bring back around the discussion on the housing master plan that we had discussed last year. This year in 2017, we will actually see it come to fruition. I'm going to discuss first the purpose of the housing master plan. Its first purpose is really to help you develop policy. It will be part of our general plan 2040. It's a section within the general plan. It will be updating that. And it will bring a broad and comprehensive review of our, and it will include community input about our housing inventory, the types, the varieties, and where we want to see that go. It'll also be data driven to provide you that ability to in your decision making. It also will be a plan that is provides guidance. So it will support our consolidated plan, which is a required document for our HUD funds. It will provide focus and priority on how we invest those federal funds. It also, again, provides that data-driven approach in prioritizing our investments, not just our federal funds, but any other city assets that we want to put towards housing. There's three phases to this. The first phase is really about gathering all the information, creating that community profile of where are we at with our housing inventory in Mesa. We have a consultant selected who will start doing this very shortly, and that consultant is tasked with bringing together the housing stock, ranges in rent and home prices, income levels, the trends of the housing that we have experienced in the last 10 years, and also projections for the next 10 years, which would help set the context for plan recommendations. Once the consultant's complete with that report, we will bring that to you for you to review and discuss. And the second phase will be really getting that community engagement, the input. We're going to outreach, talk to key stakeholders, neighborhood leaders, and residents, and we'll be sharing with them the results. We'll be asking what their community vision is. We will be using public meetings. We'll be using those engagement apps and our technology so that we can get as broad input as possible. We're going to organize that information once we go through that community engagement and bring that back to you, the council, to look, which is the final phase for the council to review and provide that understanding and start developing the framework for policy. It'll come through first to the Community and Cultural Development Committee, ultimately through study session and then council action, adopting those plan recommendations. So just a quick overview of the timeline. Again, it's going to take most of 2017, and hopefully by the end of the year we'll have a good sense of where we'll be going forward. Any questions?
Thank you, Liz. Mr. Thompson.
The only question I had was on your phase one, I believe it is.
Mm-hmm.
When you're doing your housing trend, do we really want to look at the past 10 years? Because the past 10 years would put you right at the beginning of the recession.
Sure.
Where there was a large influx of foreclosures. We had a lot of vacant, brand new homes. There were lots that were graded for housing that ended up going into foreclosure. So you wouldn't really pick up a true trend, per se, of the housing market and what was happening if you look at that last 10 years.
Well, I would say, Mayor, Councilman Thompson, I think that's what we want to know, is where were the foreclosures? Because that did actually become a major issue for us in our housing programs back during the recession, because we kind of moved from looking at new stock. Well, because then it was the NSP?
The Neighborhood Stabilization Program. Yes.
So we were going back into neighborhoods, and then we were acquiring, I don't know how many we ended up acquiring, several homes that from the banks. We were literally had arrangement. We were purchasing those from the bank. So that whole change in the housing economy, to your point, was significant, certainly in certain parts of the city, not everywhere, but that concentration created some unique opportunities where we had to kind of modify our housing strategy and how we were going to, what our role was, or at least from the city's role, of going into these foreclosed homes and going in and rehabbing those and trying to get people into those homes, because that was a concern. You had all these vacant homes and in a high concentration, many neighborhoods, and we were trying to get individuals back into those homes. Does that make sense? I think we were just trying to, I think having, knowing where that was and then maybe seeing how we've come out of the foreclosure period may be instructive for us as we go forward. Okay. I don't know. I think that was our thinking.
Okay. That's fine. I was just curious as to what type of train.
It's not always the stuff that's being built, but it may be the stuff that was not moving, so.
And Mayor, Councilmember Thompson, I concur and want to add that those trends sometimes come back. And so, that was a huge crisis for us, but there is always that market condition that when the prices go up, they're going to start coming down again. And we could always be at risk in revisiting that type of bubble burst. So we want to make sure we understand what happened then and how we can avoid that in the future as much as possible.
Thank you. Mr. Luna.
Thank you, Liz, for your great words. And I think the impetus on this is to when we begin to allocate some of the home funds in 2018, we will have a benchmark, if you will, to help us make the decisions. For example, if a LIHTC housing project wants to come to the city, we can see where there's a greater need, or any of those kind of, or even a market rate project. This instrument will help us make those determinations. Would you agree that's the whole idea behind this?
Mayor, Vice Mayor, Luna, absolutely. This is the intent in helping provide that guidance and policy.
Thank you, Mr.
I have two questions.
Yes, I'm sorry, is that Ryan?
Yes, this is Ryan Winkle. So thank you again, Liz. So this is a broad and comprehensive review, but will this actually look into each of what I call the nodes of Mesa and tell about density as far as like downtown, West Mesa, East Mesa, what's appropriate? And then my second question is, we did a lot of work on the consolidated plan about 2 years ago, and there's specific priorities that say certain things. Will this new housing plan take that into consideration?
Mayor, Councilmember Winkle, thank you for your question. It will definitely define some of those density areas that you were talking about throughout the city as far as the types of housing and where they're located. So multifamily versus single family versus mobile home communities. So that type of information will be there. We really anticipate, and we put into the RFP that the consultant would take into consideration everything that was done in the consolidated plan to review that, analyze that, and validate some of those numbers. We don't expect the Housing Master Plan to take the place of the consolidated plan, but it will be a supplement and will just broaden our understanding of housing. But the consolidated plan is still a vital document, and those priorities are in place for 5 years. I'll be talking more about the consolidated plan next week.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Freeman.
Liz, thanks so much. The last couple of days, I've had the opportunity to rub shoulders with some developers and some upcoming projects in District 1, and there's some of the community engagement has confused the developer because some of the infill projects and things that have been talked about, the developers have said Mesa really doesn't have a master housing plan. And so the approach for them is, well, how do we satisfy the city's requirements for these zoning issues and building the buildings versus what the community wants and the neighborhood wants? So you're going to get a lot of input from your neighborhood stakeholders, because I think the appropriate kind of infill into these properties that we have is very important for the revival and restoration of our neighborhoods. And I think it's great that you're reaching out to the stakeholders or to the community residents, because their input is greatly needed. Just as a site over here that 17 that we're going to have.
Yeah,
you know, there's going to be a lot of input. The sad part about 17 was I don't think there was very many people who responded to the survey, 1,800 people, I think, overall.
Yeah, maybe something like that.
It was, I mean, for a city of 480,000 people, we get 1,800 surveyed recipients. That's kind of low in my estimation. But I applaud you. I really look forward to having this timeline and getting this out there. And I appreciate your one-on-one meetings with me, bringing me up to speed in understanding what you're going through.
Mayor, Councilmember Freeman, it's my pleasure and to be able to do that. And I will say that community input is as important as anything in this document. So we need to make sure we're doing what's best for the community and the residents.
Thank you, Liz. I have a couple of questions. I think we're required to have a housing plan, but we're also required to update the housing plan. So this is we're going through the motions. This is something we have to do. But it comes at a critical time when we are struggling with some interesting housing issues. We have a redeveloping downtown, and I think councils for the last couple of councils have made one of their strategic goals to be to bring more residential development to downtown so that we have more of an active 24/7 environment downtown. And I think we've kind of been shooting from the hip in terms of knowing, well, how much, what's the sweet spot in terms of how many more residential properties is healthy for downtown? And that we've shot different numbers around. But I'm hoping that as a result of this process, maybe we'll have a more expert opinion to advise us as to what our goals ought to be for a community as to how much residential do we need, how much is too much, and how much of what variety. I know I've met with Housing Director Traylor a year or two ago, and as we all know, he's been very encouraging in supporting LIHTC housing along the light rail corridor. His explanation for that was, well, as your community develops, LIHTC housing is going to be priced out of your downtown. And very quickly, market rate is going to crowd them out, and you won't have the pressure. You won't have people trying to bring LIHTC housing. So I'm curious to... We have talked about, let's address the issue of LIHTC housing as we talk about, as we update our housing plan. So I'm hoping that that will be one of the outcomes of this plan, is we'll get some, rather than judging each of these projects on a one-off basis as they come to us, we can say, yes, your project fits into our LIHTC plan, or no, it doesn't. And it'll inform us as to how we ought to vote on those projects. And then finally, I know we have also talked about the issue of homelessness, and I don't think that homelessness is necessarily an issue that typically is covered under a housing plan. So if that's not part of this, I get it, but I think it's still an issue that we need to discuss and to develop a strategic plan on. I've heard a rumor that our point-in-time survey a week or two ago may have identified a spike in homelessness in our downtown and in our city. So this is an issue that is going to continue to grow, and we need to be very strategic in the way that we respond to it. So I guess that, I'm sorry, that wasn't a very good question, was it?
And Mayor, we'll be coming back to you next week. Next week we'll be specifically have the opportunity to talk about that.
Great. So the homelessness issue will be a separate agenda item next week.
Yes.
But as part of the consolidated master plan for housing, mm-hmm. Will we tackle the topic of LIHTC, and if so, how?
Mayor, I will say that the consultant has been tasked to look at all housing types and whether they're market, whether they're considered affordable for low to moderate income households. So that will all be part of the discussion.
So, Mayor, I was just going to say, remember, this is a study that's going to take a while. Yeah. So it's going to be a tool to bring back to council to establish policy. But we do understand, council may want to have that discussion about how we use our home funds and our CBG funds, even as in this next round,
right.
This year.
Right.
So we'll be having that discussion also here in the next week. So while this is a kind of more of a longer term, I guess, 1 year out,
yes.
approach, we will be having the opportunity for council to weigh in on the policy about these more programmatic specific things in the next week.
Thank you. Mr. Luna.
Just real quick, Liz. Councilmember Freeman made a good point about infill. Will we have an idea what land is available when we look at the housing master plan as we plot out the city? Because
I see it visually. I go, okay, here we have LIHTC here. We have market right here. We have in here, infill here, where it could potentially be a place that we could put market rate or LIHTC. Will that be part of that as well?
Well, I look over to John Wesley. I mean, I think that Mayor and Vice Mayor Luna, that information exists, and whether that's incorporated, we can talk to the consultant and let them know that's information we can incorporate into that. That wasn't part of the RFP, but I don't think that is a far-fetched item for them to include.
Mayor, Council, with Liz and Councilmember Luna, that is important information that we need. As we see development proposals coming in, we're trying to balance development types around the city. A general plan calls for having a variety of housing types around the city so people can live in different parts of the city and have those different opportunities. Hopefully this study, the director will provide it, will be able to use the information that comes out of that for us to analyze it a little closer and help with those types of decisions.
John, we can identify vacant properties that are, you know, and the size of properties, but sometimes infill not only is just, I guess, remnant or orphan properties that are left undeveloped, but sometimes infill can take out existing buildings too. But I know at a minimum we have tracked vacant lots, and we can show, we can include those in the report. Mm-hmm. So as we begin to look at the type of housing stock and those, I mean, you could start with that as the first layer, right, and say, okay, where's vacant lots that are in areas that we're seeing pressures for new types of development? We could identify those. Those would probably be the easiest thing for us to do it initially, so council has that.
Thank you very much. Mr. Winkle, Mr. Whitaker, any additional questions before we move on? Okay.
This is Jeremy. I'm good.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much, Liz. Next item on our agenda is item 2C, to hear a presentation and discuss the financial revenues of the city with emphasis on the general governmental funds. I have our budget director, Candace Canestrano, coming forward. Thank you, Candace.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. With me today, I have Brian Richel. So hopefully, as long as my voice holds out, he's kind of my backup in case it goes out. But what we wanted to do is, this year we wanted to come, usually we come about this time, and we talk to you about the forecast, and we talk about revenues and expenses and kind of bring it all together. What we wanted to do this time, this year, is break it down into kind of the major components and walk through it a little bit slower, so we can kind of take it through the, all the major issues that actually go into the forecast that ends up with our financial status for the city. So today, we'll be talking about, today we'll be talking about the governmental funds and the major revenues that are within the governmental funds. Next week, we're going to come back and talk to you about the enterprise fund as a whole, and then also talk to you about major expenses that we see in our pressures that we're having in our general fund. And then we're going to kind of wrap it all together at the end in a fourth meeting, and then kind of come back and just give you, pull all together and give you the financial status of where we are today. Okay. So just as an overview, this is the total budget for this year, fiscal year 16-17. It's $1.67 billion. This chart shows the sources or where those revenues come from. Some of those revenues, and you see those major sections there. This just kind of give you some perspective. We'll be going into all of these. On this one, what we'd like to do is kind of introduce or reintroduce for some of you funds and what a fund is. So our resources are our revenues. You can see all those categories listed on the left-hand side of your screen. These then break into particular categories based on the restrictions of the funds. So the funds that come in, actually, some of them do not have restrictions and some of them do. And that makes a difference onto the uses that we can have for those particular revenues. And so there are many different funds that we use within the city, and those are listed on the right-hand side. And at the very end of the presentation, we won't go over it this morning, but I did give you some little guides on each revenue source on the left, which buckets those fill on the right-hand side. And so you can go, and if you have any questions, you can ask me, and we can go over those later. We won't do those this morning. Okay. But what is a fund? So just a real simple, to keep simple, a fund is a way that allows us to track revenues and expenses that are intended for or restricted to a particular purpose. So I gave you kind of a more technical definition on the slide, but basically it's a matter that we can track them because there's a restriction on them, or there's some type of a management restriction where we want to account for something separately so it's easier to see. So that's really what a fund is when we're talking about general governmental accounting. Today we're going to talk about just the general fund and the grant fund. General fund are the resources and expenses that are discretionary in nature. What that means is that they are not restricted in their use. So it's up to the council on how we actually use and allocate those different ones. We have some examples here. Those would be things like public safety, fire, police, parks, library. It's also the municipal court, neighborhood outreach, and then all the general governmental type activities that keep the city running. When we go down just to the general governmental fund, when we're talking about just general governmental, instead of that $1.67 billion that we started with, we're actually talking about $400 million. That's our what we would consider our unrestricted general governmental funds. Now, for presentation purposes here, we have added the quality of life sales tax. It is technically a restricted fund, but it is completely committed to public safety. So for presentation, we like to put these two together so we can talk about public safety as a whole within these.
Sorry, can I ask a quick question?
Yes.
I've always been confused. The amount that didn't sunset on the quality of life sales tax, I know we earmarked that for public safety.
Yes,
but it was my understanding that maybe a portion of that was also to be applied to the operation and maintenance of the MAC. Is that not the case?
In the original election, that's why we say it's a restricted fund. It is restricted. It is not restricted necessarily to public safety, but because of the during the recession, we don't have the total dollars that we originally thought that program would bring in. Public safety is the only things that are currently being covered by that revenue source.
Candace, also, the cost of public safety.
Yes, the cost of public safety has gone up.
It is equal to or greater than the quality of life sales tax. So for the positions
greater
that we're
going to... Greater than would be the correct way to say that.
And so there were in the quality of life sales tax when it was approved, was identified, and I don't remember the numbers exactly, Mayor, but there was a certain number of police officers and a certain number of firefighters. So we literally track those number as in our fund. And so when you, I don't know what the, I can't remember what the number is, but those specific number of police officers and firefighters are paid for by that quality of life. And when there's nothing left after that. So, I mean, if there were, yes, yeah. You know, we would be able to, if the quarter cent was greater than the what we needed to cover those specific positions, then yes, we would be able to use that for the Mesa Arts Center.
So actually, for accounting purposes, we could allocate some of that money to the MAC,
right,
and it would be
but then the general fund would just have to pick up.
But the
general
public
fund
safety
to pick
more
up the
than
the fire
yes.
covers
yes.
it, so it's for accounting purposes, it's easier just to say we're putting it into
public
safety.
Safety.
Okay, I'm
correct.
Sorry. Thank you.
Correct. And right, and that is, and it is 120 police officers, and it is 65 firefighter units. So it's not firefighters, but the units, the captain and the engineer and firefighters. So that's what it covers. During the recession, it did not cover those positions, but we maintained those positions, and the general fund picked up the rest of those positions. We are finally getting to the point, we're getting very close, that we're actually fully covering those positions within this fund. But as Mr. Brady said, the expenses, though, are rising faster than the sales taxes. So I don't foresee ever having any additional funds beyond those positions within the Quality of Life Fund. When it comes to forecasting, what we call forecasting is both a science and an art when we're talking about revenues. So we actually have a subscription through the University of Arizona for raw economic data. And so we take those economic indicators and factors from the University of Arizona, and we in-house have staff that are able to take those economic indicators and apply our revenue streams and look for those relationships, basically do the economic forecasting within in-house on how we think we're going to go going out. That's the science part, right? That's the math part and the econometrics part of it. And then the art part of it is actually then taking those factors which are regional in nature, they're not Mesa specific, and then putting that Mesa spin on them. What does that mean to Mesa, and what are we seeing in our community? And what are we seeing for economic development? What are we seeing coming in on our building permits and those types of things? And then kind of tweaking those revenue estimates based on what we're seeing in our own community. Within the general governmental funds, there are three major contributors to those, and that is our local city sales tax, our state shared revenues, and we'll go over these, and also the transfer from the enterprise fund. So when we look at all three of these together, this chart just kind of shows you the relative revenue contributions for each source, just so you can kind of get a perspective on the contributions going into this particular fund, but we're going to go into each one of these individually. Over here, we're looking at our forecast for 17-18, and we're showing about a 2.9% increase in available revenues right now being forecasted for next year as compared to what we think we're going to end with this year. So it's not budget to next year, but what we're projecting for this year. So
Mr.
In this
Thompson
year,
has a question. Thank you.
Candace, just out of curiosity, on your urban revenue sharing, are you comfortable projecting the $57 million when actuals were down by about 0.5% from previous years? Because it looks like it went down 0.5%, but then we're projecting a 9.3% increase. Are you comfortable with that number?
Mayor and Councilmember Thompson, I am so glad you asked me that question. I am 100% comfortable in that number. Of note, I was going to say that the one thing on this page, the one thing that's a known factor is the urban revenue sharing. There is actually a two-year lag time between the income tax,
that is earned within the state of Arizona and when we receive it as a city. So that number right there is the actually only known number in that column. So okay. I'm so glad you asked me about that.
So Councilor Thompson, the number you're probably seeing in 15, 16, or yeah, it was 2 years prior.
Okay. Right. When we do look at that, and I will tell you, so to give you a little note, last year when we did the forecast, obviously we did not know the 17, 18 number. And we were looking at that large increase in 16, 17. And we were having to take a look at that and try to determine, is that an ongoing revenue stream? Is it a new base, basically? Or is this something happen? And when we looked at that, we did find that there were some one-time capital gains taxes that were in that year. And so we did not anticipate that level would continue into the next year. So last year's forecast did not anticipate it continuing, and we're seeing it did not continue into the next year. So we're pretty much right on track with where we thought we would be when we forecasted the 17-18 number last year.
Okay. And then this is probably another one for Scott. We're hearing again state shared revenue sweeps potentially, and how is that going to impact us?
Mayor, Councilmember Thompson, right now the only threat, if you want to put it that way, that has been confirmed for shared revenue as part of the budget proposal that's been presented by the governor was dealing with university funding, taking some of the sales tax collected that they deem attributable to our four-year research institutions and allowing them to retain that sales tax and use it for a bonding scheme for capital investment on the university campuses. So we're working through that. Obviously, we have a lot of concerns about anything that would start diverting shared revenue away and to cities. That's about $3 million out of a much larger pot. So it's not necessarily this notion of the amount of money. It goes to the heart of shared revenue and the fact that the state shouldn't be making unilateral decisions that impact our bottom line in the cities.
And then again, this is just an overview of where we're looking, what we're forecasting in for 17-18, and then we'll take a look at each of these areas. So the first major revenue source is our city sales and use tax, which is our local. And we take a look at this pie chart, you can see that the city of Mesa sales tax is 1.75%. And some people find that's confusing when they look at their receipts because their sales tax is higher than that. There are county tax and state tax on top of that as well. So the overall for Mesa for a resident walking in is 8.05%, but the city's portion is 1.75% rate. That's our rate. It's broken into those three different categories. The city sales tax is just that's the general unrestricted portion of the sales tax. And then you can see the quality of life tax there. That's our 0.25% that did not sunset as part of that ballot. And then we also have a local street sales tax, which is 0.3% of the rate. And we won't be talking about that today because it doesn't go into the general fund. That would be restricted, and it would be restricted for transportation purposes only, street purposes. As we take a look at our seasonal trend in our sales tax, you can see that we actually do have two peak periods. The first one is Christmas, and the second one is what we like to call our second Christmas, which is spring training. And you can see how important spring training is to the city of Mesa because it is almost as much as our Christmas season, our buying season. Now, one thing you look at here, just a note on the chart, and we did note it, that when you're looking at that for reporting purposes, it looks like Christmas was in January, but that's when the sales were in December, and then they were reported in January from the retail industry. So that's why you see one month lag there. One of the things that changed this year, usually we only had that 1 month lag in reporting because the sales tax came in through the city of Mesa. Now that the sales tax reports are all going through the Department of Revenue at the state, there's actually now a 2 month lag because of 1 month for reporting to them, and then they have a 1 month reporting lag to get it to us. So we'll actually have a little bit of a delay this year on knowing actually what happened with Christmas. So we won't know Christmas for two more months. So this month we'll know about November and Black Friday and those types of sales, and then it'll be one more month before we really know how Christmas happened. So when we're looking at our sales tax.
Excuse me, Candace. Oh. Mr. Luna has a question for you.
So when we have spring training, we know that's a real surplus for the city of Mesa. It's a bang for us. So how quickly will we learn about that in terms of sales tax?
For spring training?
Yeah.
The spring training will probably, we will not know the actual receipts for spring training until after we've adopted the budget because of this two-month lag now. Mm-hmm. But we will know ticket sales, and we will know, you know, how many people attended, especially with the rally, which is an extra event for us downtown. Those types of things, we can kind of get an understanding of how we think it went. So we do those estimates on how we think the season went. Mm-hmm. We won't actually know the receipts until we finalize the budget.
Probably about May.
Okay.
But we're hoping for a World Series bump this year.
We are.
Yes.
World Series champions comes. That's what we're looking for. Yep. We're going to sell out twice as much. I don't know.
That's right.
So parking lot chairs or something.
Yeah.
So when you look at that, so this is kind of just a five-year. You can see what's happened over the last 5 years. As you go, each one of those lines is a year in sales tax. You can see the big difference. And this is that recession. This is that recovery of the recession coming back. When we look at sales tax is not just one kind of big group, but it's actually multiple groups depending on the industry that comes in. And so we wanted to give you kind of an idea of the various industries within the sales tax, where we're collecting sales tax. And you can see from this graph here that we are very dependent on retail, the retail sales tax portion of that. And that's why you hear us talking about it all the time. You know, how are we doing on car sales and how are we doing on retail and so forth? Because we are so dependent on the retail portion of that. But we don't want to forget the other areas, especially the rentals and the contracting, which are the next two. Those have both been targeted for legislation in the past. That would have been very detrimental to the city financially if those bills had passed in those more recent years. We have not heard of any bills relating to these two coming forward this year. We will stay vigilant in watching those, but we're sure that we'll probably see those again in the future. If they don't come back this year, we'll probably see those again in the future, but we'll have to pay attention to those because those were what was presented in the past would have been very detrimental to our financial bottom line.
I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. The last couple of sessions, I have been involved in lobbying against the bills on the contracting and the rentals, mm-hmm. and I have. Scott, is it fair to say that I was kind of expecting that the construction sales tax issue was going to be a part of the legislative agenda this year? I'd be relieved to hear that it's not, but any insights on that?
Well, Mayor, the session's still young, and so we're using Candace's very appropriate word. We're staying vigilant on this because what's a mechanism referred to as strike everything amendments at the legislature, which the new leadership, frankly, in the House and the Senate have done a great job on somewhat limiting those, the ability to do those. It's given us a little bit of peace about the scope of some of these issues that may come back. I do agree. It looks surprisingly like we won't be discussing residential rental taxes this session, which would be a nice reprieve from the last few years, and contracting is one thing that we're going to continue to watch for.
Okay, but currently there's no bill that has been dropped to tweak the way that we collect construction sales tax.
Correct.
Okay, interesting. Thank you, Mr. Thompson.
And I know Liz is probably already gone, but one of the things that, again, associated with the rentals and those bills, that could have an impact on whether or not this council wants to move forward with approving any type of rentals on the housing piece as well, on the LIHTC especially.
I agree. That's one of the conversations we've had with the Multi-Housing Association is that eliminating our ability to collect revenue off of rental property would have an impact on our appetite for rental property. So that's a beat back. That's been success, part of the good arguments in preventing that from happening to this point, and we'll just have to hope that continues to be the case. Thank you. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, please proceed. Quite all right. Good discussion. And then one last note on these different categories. Because they are different categories, they also have different behavior, and so we actually forecast these individually based on the category when we're doing the sales tax. So when we look at our sales tax forecast for next year, it's really a summation of all of the forecasts of these individual categories that we look at. This is just kind of give a perspective of where we are. We'd like to look back to about the 2005-06 time period because that's pre-recession to then through the recovery period and then into the future. And you can see as where we sit today on our total sales tax collected just on the dollar amount, so that is not bringing in present present value of dollar, you know, the future value of dollars or present value of dollars. So on the dollar amount, we were brought back to where we were 10 years ago. So right now, so it's looking good. When you saw on that sales check over the last 5 years, you saw that the sales tax coming up and up and up. It looks like we're growing, and we are, but really we're growing back to where we were. And that's about where we are right now.
That's a major issue that sometimes we have to keep reminding individuals. We're still in the recovery mode from 2006. We are just getting there. And
right. We've just arrived at where we were before the recession.
But the challenge we have, or the concern we have, is that this has been a sustained growth over 6 years, 5-6 years. You know, now you start hearing people talk about, okay, when's the next downturn going to happen? And so just when we think we've recovered, a 10-year, you know, it took us 10 years, it may be another reset. So a lot of times, you know, people try to compare what we used to do in a lot of activities and services in the city 10 years ago. Well, we're just getting back on the sales tax to where we were 10 years ago. So that's what we try to remind everyone. We've done a whole lot with less for the last 10 years, and now we're just getting back to where we were in 2006.
And unfortunately, expenses did not stay in the 05, 06 levels. Are there any other questions on local sales tax? Because that's going to be into that section. The second major revenue source is state shared revenues. So state shared revenues are anything that is collected really at the state level, and then there's a formula, and they're all based on population, on how that kind of trickles back to the city of Mesa. And so there are three main areas within our state shared revenues that affect the general fund. There also is the HERF, the Highway User Revenue Tax, that you talked about in the bond presentation, but that is restricted to transportation, so we don't talk about that this morning in this group. So the three areas are the urban revenue sharing, and that is the income tax. And so so if we first refer to the income tax or urban revenue sharing, it's really the same thing. Also, our state sales tax. So there was that state portion of the sales tax. We do get a portion of that back to the city of Mesa, again, through a formula based on population. And then our vehicle license tax. So those that when you register your vehicles and you pay that vehicle license tax, a portion of that comes back to Mesa as well. So again, this chart here just shows the dependency we have on the three different areas. The urban revenue sharing, or the income tax, is the highest one. And that's where you see that solid line. You see the solid line continues to 17-18 because, again, that's the known number. It's not a forecasted number, where the other ones for the state sales tax and for the vehicle license tax are both forecasted. And we use the same forecasting methodology for those as we do for our local state sales tax. Okay. And just to give you a little bit, it looks like it's very easy. It looks like they're just straight lines, and how hard is it to forecast those? But here's what really happens in each one of those areas. And so you can look at the income tax, and there's a historical view. Again, there's our pre-recession versus our post-recession view of this. And I do have to apologize. It should be a solid line going to 17-18. We missed that one on this graph. That should be a solid line. But you can kind of see where that recession came in, and also that lag, that two-year lag between where you thought the recession was and what this graph is showing, because that's going to be that lag in the receipts to the city.
So for shared revenue, we still are, we're not at pre-recession levels because
you're not.
The legislature is just not as generous as it was. But they don't have the resources to be, but though the income may be at pre-recession levels, our popularity at the legislature is not what it once was.
Well, and there's also been some changes in statute over time, so there's been some decrease in the commercial side of the income tax that affected this as well and kind of dropped that line down a little bit.
Also, the formula in which cities distribute or share in the allocation of state shared revenues has also changed as other cities have grown at a faster rate than Mason.
All right. Sure.
Right, and that's what we have when we have the census.
Sure.
And we'll be coming up on that again with the next census. They'll be resetting some numbers. The next one is just, again, the historical view of the state sales tax, and you can see how that kind of reacted during the recession. Mesa's portion, again, this is Mesa's portion of the state sales tax. So, again, it is based on population formulas and those types of things. And then the last one is the vehicle license tax, which is a smaller one, but it is significant still in the number of dollars that are coming to Mesa through this particular source and how that affects. And you can see kind of little bumps in there, and that's going to be your pent-up demand for vehicles, right? So as new vehicles are purchased, their vehicle license tax value goes up. They pay more when they do it. And then you get those bumps, and they start kind of coming down over years. So every time we have a big bump in auto sales, you're going to see a bump in the vehicle license tax, and then it starts coming down as the values come down again. And that's why when you see that little bump in there, it's going to be that pent-up demand from after the recession. And we did have some good auto sales a while back. Okay, are there any questions on state share revenues? I know, Chris is moving me on. But we're pretty much almost done now. Those are the two. That's all the money, really. That's where all the money is right there, is those two things that we talked about. Those are the revenues coming into the city. The third piece is the transfer from the enterprise fund. And as Councilmember Freeman mentioned earlier, we do have enterprises. We are going to go over those in full on Monday at your Monday study session, and we'll talk about the different enterprises. But basically, the enterprises are expected to return, expected to produce a reasonable rate of return. That reasonable rate of return, we take a portion of that, and that is moved over to reinvest into the general governmental side, basically into public safety. Real quickly, I want to talk about, it's not one of the major areas, but usually people ask us about building permits. It's kind of in our other category for revenues that come in. It's not so much that it's the significance of the revenues themselves as it is the economic indicators that they represent. And so we take a look at the building permit activity. So just give you a little view of what's going on, where we've seen it. It's residentials where we're seeing the real big spike, and we kind of talked about that about a year ago. And the mayor even mentioned it in the State of the City address last year. We were talking about the residential permits are just coming in so high, so you can kind of see that activity there. We are forecasting to maintain that activity. So you see it's not increasing, but maintain, that is a very high level of activity. So we're forecasting to maintain the activity at this point for the next couple of years as we'll keep looking at those, the community itself.
There's probably one of those years in the out years you're going to see a dip.
It's going to dip.
We're going to run that inventory, just going to run out of space.
Right. Mm-hmm. So right now I'm not forecasting an increase, but it's still optimistic to say that we're going to continue that for, it's how many number of years are we going to be able to continue that activity? That would be the question. Mm-hmm. And then our building permit revenues that come in with that. So the permit revenues do cover the cost of doing the permitting and the plan review and those types of things. And so you can kind of see a bump there. Two things about this particular bump, about why is it going down? Some questions we receive are, if the activities are maintaining, why are the revenues going down? There's a couple things going on in there. One, the commercial revenues per permit are actually much greater than the residential permits. So even though the residential permits are going up, just a slight decline at all in the commercial, and that kind of offsets on the revenues. And then also when they had that big spike, there was a lot of expedited reviews that were happening in order to kind of push all that through. Those expedited reviews cost more, and so you can see the bump in the revenues.
So an Apple,
we charge more.
An Apple permit.
An Apple permit
could
came
be,
in, and yeah.
The permit could be really high. But it doesn't show. It shows the revenue could be significant, but you see the revenue. You know, the activity looks low. So it kind of that fluctuates more. The difference between a permit and the cost can change much more dramatically under the commercial than does under residential.
Excuse me, Mr. Freeman.
I learned in one of my last meetings from Christine that building permits, especially on the commercial side, if a developer wants to push them through, he could request two or three times, even four times the money to expedite.
Expedited, and they've like a super expedited and.
Two and three times, and I know three times was used, maybe not four, but
yeah, that was,
I thought, man, that's pretty efficient. If a developer wants a project to be pushed through immediately, Christine and her group said that we'll facilitate that and basically work 24/7.
Yeah, they'll find a way to do it.
It helps to pay overtime.
They also have temporary staff that are skilled in those areas that can come in and work on those particular projects.
But that shows you time is money for them.
Right.
So we need to be responsive to their needs and and then maybe extrapolate it, I don't know, on the residential side.
But we have, everywhere else, we also have timelines when we have to get things done. I mean, there are actually dates that if we don't get it out, we reimburse the resident or the home builder with the permit fee.
I think 10 days turnaround for residential or commercial and vice versa, 18 days, I believe, is the other turnaround. So that's great. I appreciate that.
All right, and then real quick, we don't want to not talk about grant funds because grant funds are very important to the city when it comes to the general fund because they augment what we can do with our general fund revenues that we've talked about. The biggest receivers of those grants that are in the general fund are the police and fire and medical departments. So those two receive the most grants coming in. And again, that just allows us to buy that specialty equipment, that emergency equipment that are big ticket dollars, and usually use grants for that type of stuff. So the next one is just examples of the different types of grants that we get for police department. And the next one is examples of what we get for fire and medical, but we do need to make a note here on one grant that they're currently receiving. They're in their third year of a three-year grant. And so what that means, it'll expire in September of 2017. This is the grant that is allowing them to do that community care type services that they're providing right now, where they're going out to the houses and meeting with someone who has a nurse practitioner or a physician's assistant type thing. So that's the grant that they're currently under right now. It does expire in September of 17, which is in the next fiscal year that we're planning for right now. And so they will need to work with how are they going to, if and how, they'd be able to continue to provide those services without this particular grant as a funding source. And then with that, are there any questions that you have on the revenue side of the general governmental fund?
Thank you, Candace. Mr. Whitaker or Winkle, any questions before we move off of this item?
No, sir.
I don't have anything.
Okay, thank you. Council, any questions?
I do. I really like the buckets and the colors. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Luna.
You know, I get this question asked all the time about taxes and stuff. Is there any way to do like 2-minute little video that we can pull off the web and show our residents? I was with Boy Scouts last night and they were asking me about taxes. Now, how does taxes work in Mesa? And I, you know, they think they're paying 8.2%. Oh, no, it's only 1.7%.
Oh.
And so they don't, you know, and of course they're children, but there's some of our members of the community that need to have that understanding. And if we could pull a little video, create a little video, pull it from the web, and so we can show
it's basically on sales tax. Where does your sales tax go?
Where the money goes to? I mean,
Mayor, Vice Mayor, have you seen the budget video we've done? The characters. Let's show you that.
Okay.
Right. It's on the homepage for the budget office.
Look at that and see, because that may, and if we need to maybe modify that one, but that one kind of goes to the whole budget. Where does money come? How does money come into the city?
Right.
How's it getting used?
Right.
So we'll send that out to the council again, so take a link at that.
That would be great.
And then we can change it, but just look at that first.
Yeah. I was just impressed that the Boy Scouts would ask me about sales tax.
And that's one of the things that I also, when I talk to people in the public, or I go to the Mesa Leadership and Development, and it's amazing how we come across people who don't understand that shopping in Mesa brings the sales tax back to Mesa. They kind of forget that we have that local piece. There's been a lot of people who just don't understand that. That shopping in Mesa makes a difference. It comes back to Mesa.
This presentation and the previous one on bonds are both were very easy to understand, and I think I'd love to see them on a short reel and seen over and over again, because I think it helps people to understand what our challenges are.
And the guys in the back are just the ones that go into the general fund.
Right.
I'll be giving you the other ones as well. So we'll give you kind of a little snapshot. So this little guideline that says, in our taxes, secondary property tax goes into this bucket, and this one goes into this bucket. I think it makes it easier to understand.
Great. Thank you very much. Good presentation. Appreciate it. Next item on our agenda is item 3, information pertaining to the current job order contracting projects. Council, any questions regarding that item? Mr. Whitaker and Winkle, any questions on that item?
No, sir.
Nothing.
Okay, thank you. Next item is to acknowledge receipts of minutes of various boards and committees. Is there a motion to that effect? Thank you. All in favor, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Any opposed? Thank you. Next item is to hear reports on meetings and conferences attended. Anything anyone wants to talk about? Mr. Freeman?
I think you had a couple of meetings this last weekend, if I remember right. And I appreciate you cowboying up. I invited the mayor to, wish there was more people here to see the picture, but I think we have a picture of the mayor, if that's possible.
Oh my gosh.
Isn't that awesome?
I think I'm photoshopped into that. I don't
know. Now, when he challenged him to wear a hat and ride a horse, he was willing to do that, and I appreciate that. We had a commemorative ride going in the old trail that the pioneers took out of the Salt Riverside about Val Vista and 202 Freeway. We rode a 5-mile ride into the Lehigh area. So mayor cowboyed up and rode in Little Black there. I don't know Little Black is so little, but he's a nice horse. So appreciate the mayor doing that.
Well, thank you to Kathy and Claude Adams for letting me ride their horse. That was a lot of fun, and we are proud of it's great to have Lehigh in the city of Mesa. I mean, you go to Lehigh, it's a very rural environment. It's dark, and it smells like horses and in the right places. I mean, it's a great part of our community. So I think it's great that Mesa is not... vanilla. It's that we got. You can go to different parts of Mesa, and they are very different from one another. And so, it's important that we preserve Lehigh. And so, I was happy to be there, and I was happy to thank you for the kind invitation to be a part of that, Mr. Freeman. Any other questions or items under meetings and conferences attended? Yes, the same last Saturday. We also had the
Unity Walk.
I was happy to, proud to participate in that on Saturday at Tempe Town Lake with all of the other East Valley cities. Just again committing the message that we have said over and over again the last few weeks that Mesa is proud of our diversity, proud of to be a welcoming and inclusive community. So that was an important event as well. Thank you for reminding me of that. Also, a thank you to everyone at staff and in the community that came out and supported the State of the City breakfast a couple of days ago. It was a great turnout, so thank you to the Chamber for being the sponsor of that event. And I think it was a good opportunity for us as a city to do a little bit of a commercial and let everyone know that Mesa is doing very well, that this is a strong organization as a city government and a strong economy, as we've just heard recently. So there is reason to be very excited about where we're at as a community right now, and I appreciate everyone that participated in that presentation. Any other items under meetings or conferences attended? If not, Mr. Brady, can you let us know what our schedule is?
Yes, quickly, Mayor, just a reminder, the next Household Hazardous Waste Collection event will be this Saturday, February 4th, from 8 a.m. to noon. This one will be at the East Mesa Service Center, located at 6935 East Decatur Street. Be patient. You'll be in line for a while, but it's a very popular event, but it does a lot of good. And we'll be coming to Council here very quickly with a permanent household waste collection facility that could be open throughout the week so we can maybe avoid some of these long lines. The Mesa Arts and Crafts Festival is this Saturday, the February 4th, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. On McDonald Street in downtown Mesa. Our next council meeting will be Monday, February 6th. Council will have an earlier start time. That'll be at 4:45 p.m. We have a couple presentations we'd like to provide to you prior to the council meeting. Thank you.
And as you know, we announced the Cubs rally. That was still later this month, but on opening day is Saturday the 25th. But our Cubs rally as a city will be Friday the 24th at noon. The World Series trophy will be there. That should be a big draw. So let all your Cubs fan friends know that Friday the 24th at noon is when we're going to have that big party. I'm not sure that we'll outdo the Chicago rally, but we're going to come as close as we can. Thank you. If there's nothing else, I'd entertain a motion to adjourn this meeting. Thank you very much. All in favor, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you for joining us, Mr. Whitaker and Winkle. See you soon.